Coming up on this week's edition of Hail to the Pod, we'll check in with Jason Horowitz. He's the host of Playbook on Sirius XM's satellite radio, ESPNU Radio. We'll get you ready for the bowl games, check in on the mailbag, and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Welcome to this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. I'm your host, Kevin Rich. As always, you can tweet me at krich23. You can email the show, hailtothepod@gmail.com. And as always, you can download and subscribe to the podcast on everywhere your favorite podcast platforms are found, including iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This is the first of two Hail to the Pod podcasts as we get you ready for the Michigan-Florida Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. My mouth is watering as I'm thinking about Chick-fil-A as I record this. The next podcast will definitely get you a lot more in-depth into that game as we'll preview the game with a guest from the Florida Gator side of it and, of course, get you ready with everything you need to know for that game. This podcast, on the other hand, talking bowl games in general. It's one of the best times of the year. All the big games coming up, the college football playoff. Who has a chance to beat Alabama? Can anybody beat Alabama? And our thoughts on the New Year's Six as well. And no better person to talk to about that than Jason Horowitz. He is the host of Playbook on Sirius XM Satellite Radio's ESPNU Radio, Channel 84. You can find him on Twitter at Horowitz Jason. Jason, a pleasure to have you on the podcast. A huge fan of your show. Thanks for joining me.
It's my pleasure. This is one of the greatest honors I've had in the podcast world.
Oh, you're too kind, my friend.
It's actually quite true, Kevin. I actually am not a guest for very many podcasts, so this is one of the great honors.
Well, we go way back, so I figured, you know, it was an easy phone call for me to make, and I figured you'd be obliged. Let's get right to it. Do you feel the right four teams made the playoff?
I don't think that you could have gone wrong with any of the three. With the way that our college football playoff system is now, you could make a case for all three. Like, when you watch Georgia, you feel like you're watching one of the best four. When you look at Ohio State's wins over Michigan and at Penn State, you think that they have the best set of wins. When you look at Oklahoma and they only lost by three, and it's only loss, and then avenged that loss to Texas by beating them by 12, you're like, okay, well, they don't really have a loss on the schedule anymore. So you honestly can make a case for all three. If you wanted to have the case of, hey, there was a fourth undefeated out there and you want to make that for UCF, I guess you could, although while I'm a proponent of it, I don't think in this current playoff system it sets up that way. But, yeah, I think that's how I would have voted. I think I would have voted Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Oklahoma, too.
Yeah, no, I think so, too. Would that make you a fan, knowing some of those teams that didn't get in? Would that make you a fan of playoff expansion, or do you like it the way it is?
No, I'm a fan of playoff expansion. So I'm a fan of playoff expansion to eight, but I'm not a fan of guaranteeing an automatic bid for the conference champion. So at least not how conference champions would be determined now. I like the idea of having the best teams, and I realize that leaves some ambiguity and it leaves it up for judgment. But you know, just because you win a conference championship game doesn't mean you're one of the best teams in college football, even if we go to 18.
Sure.
Now, I also realize that when the conferences agree to push it to eight, that they're going to include the conference champion. So I realize what I'm saying isn't going to happen. But I don't think you should necessarily have had Northwestern won the Big Ten championship, Northwestern in the college football playoff, or
right,
Pittsburgh.
Right, they would have gotten blown out.
Or even Utah, for that matter. I don't know if Utah was one of the best eight teams.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. So if they do expand, so you're in favor of the expansion, eight teams, just at that point, just pick the best eight teams, right?
Yes. Pick the best eight teams. And so do you still have a committee that people aren't going to like? Yes. Do you still have some decisions that aren't made on the field? Yes. But that is as much a part of college football as college football is time. You know, you used to have split champions all the time. You and I grew up in Michigan. Last year before the BCS, Michigan had a split champion. But I remember as a high school freshman, like, I was a fan then. I don't even know that I can like sports anymore. But I was a fan then. And I remember thinking, there's no way Nebraska deserves this. It's garbage. It was lucky they had the kick that year with Davidson in the end zone. Right at Missouri, like, they don't deserve this, but they split the national championship. So I think that's a big part of it. Like, people's decision making has always been a part of college football. You know, talk about the pageantry and the passion and the history. That's all part of it.
Yeah, and speaking of that split title, I was actually in Lincoln, Nebraska, went to the Nebraska-Purdue game this year. And, you know, you and I growing up in Michigan, you know, we felt one way. Gosh, those fans in Lincoln, they felt the exact opposite way. They thought Michigan had no reason to win it. They felt that Osborne deserved it. It's just funny, like, when you go across culture there and you hear it from them. And I think that's what makes college football so great.
Honestly, it's like... So you have 50 states. They don't all play FBS, right? There's no FBS football in Maine, New Hampshire, or Vermont. But you have basically 50 states with 50 different what would be collegiate football political lines. So, and it's kind of how it works. Everybody's out for their own interest, and you look out for your own people and your own fan bases, and you're from there. But on a separate note, what were you doing for Nebraska-Purdue? You have no ties to either.
No, I don't, but I, you know what? I like to go on a road game every year. I brought my buddy to the big house for the first time last year. He had a blast. He goes, look, I want to do other road trips. I want to see other Big Ten stadiums. Michigan's road game schedule wasn't really ideal this year. There was no reason I wanted to ever go back to the Horseshoe, having been there twice. So we decided, hey, let's look into it. And we picked the Nebraska game and had a blast. It's a great place to go see a game.
It's awesome. I had a chance to call a game there that came down to a game-winning kick. I did a Wisconsin-Nebraska game there.
Nice.
3 years ago? The balloons, the sold-out crowd, the team was, I mean, for them, that year was brutal because they lost like five games at the buzzer. But that's definitely a venue to get to. Good choice by you.
Yeah. I didn't lead him astray. He was thinking maybe Madison. Maybe we'll do that next year. That's a great one to go to as well. But Lincoln was a great time. We had a blast there. All right, so getting into the bowl games, I know you were like me. I know you wanted to see Florida match up with UCF. That would have put Michigan against LSU, two teams that have never played each other. But, right. Of course, we didn't get that matchup. Now we get to, you know, see the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, Michigan and Florida for the third time in 4 years. I'll tell you, I mean, you know, covering Michigan, you know, running a mostly Michigan podcast, a lot of people, you know, kind of, you know, jumping on that Michigan bandwagon, you know, easily picking them here. I think Florida's a little sneaky. You know, they say they don't have much of an offense, but that's a team that's averaged 35 on the season, 46 in their last three games. So I feel like Florida matches up here actually pretty well against Michigan. I mean, do you see this being a closer game than people are saying?
Yes, because I think there's a couple of things that factors here. One, Dan Mullen now has an extra few weeks to practice to install what Dan Mullen wants to bring back to Florida. They have players who, like Michigan, right, are freshmen, and with the new redshirt rule, you know, haven't necessarily taken the snaps, but will have the ability to do that in bowl game. And particularly with Florida, you have this quarterback there that people are very excited about, Emory Jones, who has played a couple of times but hasn't played four games, so he's going to get to redshirt. And it's one of the reasons they've gone with Felipe Franks all year is that they wanted to keep Emory Jones' eligibility as a redshirt there.
Sure.
But now he's going to get to play in the bowl game. And, like, this is a guy that people thought might be the starter from day one. They thought he might beat out Felipe Franks. They thought he might be the guy. Like, there's a lot of excitement about it. So it's like that extra wrinkle. And then the other part of it is, you know, the motivation aspect of it, right? You got Rashawn Gary sitting out. You've got Shea Patterson saying he's going to play, but he's thinking about the NFL, whether it's the right decision or not. I have no idea. But he's thinking about it. You've got all these other stuff going on. And the last time Michigan played was 62-39 against Ohio State. So, like, there's a lot of other things that go into bowl game that you wouldn't talk about in a November matchup or an October matchup. And, so I never put, A, too much stock in a bowl game result, or, right, B, put much prediction in a bowl game plan, because I have no idea. You know, like, had we talked about this at the beginning of November, I would think Michigan would win this game by two touchdowns. But, you know, January 1st or November 2nd or December 29th or whatever the date is, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I keep going back and forth on this one because you think, you know, Michigan's got to have some motivation the way they ended the season, you know, playing for the seniors. And then, of course, the fact that they haven't won a bowl game the last couple of years and the fact that they were up big in a game last year to South Carolina that they then blew at the end in not so good fashion. So, like, you'd think they'd be motivated. But at the same time, I agree with you. Like, there's a lot of things that can go on in that game. And I don't know who to pick in that one.
Yeah. Look, Michigan's a better football team. Michigan was a right. better football team all year long. And that includes the 62-39 loss to Ohio State. Like, they are a better football team. But better football teams don't necessarily win bowl games. It doesn't happen.
Jason Horowitz hosts the Playbook on SiriusXM's ESPNU Radio, Channel 84 with Andy Staples. You can find him on Twitter, at HorowitzJason. Looking at some of the other games, and this is probably one that this team doesn't need much motivation since everyone's been on them all year, but UCF, they've got that undefeated streak going. They get to, you know, show that they felt, you know, we should be in the playoff, a big game in the Fiesta Bowl against LSU. You think they keep the undefeated streak going?
Part of me would like to think so, and I would definitely say yes if Mackenzie Milton was playing.
Right.
But it's a different story. Like, you know, they played Memphis, and they were down by 17. You can do that against Memphis and come back. You can't do that against LSU. And, you know, the problem is LSU and Greedy Williams isn't playing, and they've got other guys who are thinking about the NFL, too. So, like, there's all that stuff there. The idea that LSU doesn't have a good offense, sort of true, but they also got some parts, and they're, you know, they've also got those extra practices to have wrinkles. And here's the other thing that I'm not like UCF played Auburn last year. There wasn't a UCF at that point. Like, there wasn't this groundswell of, oh my God, we have to beat UCF because if we don't, they're going to keep going on and on about how great they are. Like, UCF as a talking point happened because they beat Auburn. And because they went toe-to-toe with a team that was in the SEC championship game and frankly, were better than them at the line of scrimmage, they right. were better than them all over the place. LSU, is, you know, now that they've had a whole year of hearing about UCF and they're going to have 4 weeks of hearing about UCF and they don't have to face Mackenzie Milton, I'd love to see their winning streak go to 26 and continue into next year. I think it ends in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, I think so too. By the way, how freaking awesome was that game against A&M, that 7 overtime game?
It was great, but they got hosed. Wait a minute, they got hosed.
No, they did. Like, right.
It's great if you're the broadcaster of that game, if you're Taylor Zarzer. It's great if you're Matt Stinchcomb. It's great if you're an A&M fan. It's great if you got home from calling Western Kentucky Louisiana Tech after two flights and still were able to watch the end of it, which is really only applicable to one person. But
gee, who are we talking about?
me. But if you're an LSU fan, you got hosed twice. And I'm not even talking about the interception when you doused your coach with Gatorade, because that actually was the right call. But the fumble and not looking at the spot, like, there was a whole bunch of things there that you feel like you got hosed and probably did. So But again, I don't know that that's going to have much of a carryover effect in this too. I think the fact that they don't want to keep hearing about UCF
right.
will carry some weight.
Imagine being Ed Orgeron having to wear that Gatorade for another 2.5 hours. That's terrible.
I forgot how long that game went.
It was crazy. All right, so I can't believe I'm going to say this because I never thought I would say this about the granddaddy of them all. But is it just me? Does this Rose Bowl kind of just seem, I don't know, bleh? Like, it's just not exciting this year?
I feel like you're saying that because you're a Michigan fan.
I don't know. I watched that game against Utah, the Pac-12 championship. I don't know. Maybe I'm biased. Like sway me the other way. Like, tell me why the Rose Bowl is an exciting game to watch this year, because I just don't
see
it.
Well, okay, two things. One, if you're an Ohio State fan, you're probably seeing Dwayne Haskins for the last time ever, because he's probably going to declare for the NFL draft. He is facing a defense that has NFL players all over it, including of three first and second team All-Americans. Chris Peterson is a fascinating coach that never gets enough credit for what he's done in his career. And the reality of this Rose Bowl is that the only reason it feels blah is because 12-1 feels blah. And what I mean by that is, in the era of the college football playoff, if you don't make the four and you're Ohio State, you feel like you had a disappointing season.
True.
You know, so like It feels like that, but Rose Bowl's past when it used to be Big Ten, Pac-12 all the time, and it used to be, you know, even in the BCS era when it wasn't the spot of the national championship game and you knew you had Big Ten, Pac-12, like, you'd have two top 10 teams, and it wasn't always 3 versus 5 or 4 versus 5. Like, you'd have 6 versus 9 all the time, and they turn out to be great games. You know, Penn State, USC, going into it, now they had all kinds of momentum.
Yeah, it was a great game.
All kinds of momentum. But they turned into this, you know, fascinating championship, and I think that was probably 5 versus 8 or 5 versus 7 or something like that going in, or 5 versus 6. So, like, it was probably about the same. Ohio State, I mean, the funny thing is because of Urban Meyer, because they didn't get into the playoff, it feels like a disappointment, and it feels like the swan song to this guy that everybody's got mixed emotions about. But they blew out Michigan and then beat Northwestern by 3 touchdowns with a guy who had one of the greatest seasons in college football history at quarterback.
Right.
You know, and went 12-1. It's just in this era of where we are now, as if you're not in, you know, who's in, who's out, the whole ESPN promotions of the college football playoff, that it feels like it's a disappointment, especially when you expect to get there. And it really shouldn't feel that way.
All right, you swayed me. Maybe I'll actually turn it on. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to watch the game anyways.
I won't. So as long as someone does.
All right, well, let's get to the playoff.
Who's in it?
Yeah. Listen, I want to talk about the 2 versus 3 game first, because you've said throughout the year on your show that you feel Notre Dame is one of the most complete teams.
I do.
What makes them so good, in your opinion?
NFL players. Like, they got – we don't pay attention to it because they don't have the star name. You know, like, if you look at all the other teams, you've got Heisman Trophy finalists. You've got the guys on the defensive line like Dexter Lawrence and Wilkins for Clemson. You've got Trevor Lawrence, who's a star and looks like he belongs in a Hollywood movie. Like, you've got all of that stuff going on around you. And at Notre Dame, you don't have that. Like, who's your star? Ian Book, who was, like, your replacement quarterback in week 4? Like, you don't really have it. But at the same time, you are consistently good across the defensive line. You've got a good offensive line. You have new coordinators who did a fantastic job taking over what was a good team. Not great, but a good team last year. And this is not the same team that people saw play Alabama 6 years ago. I think that they have this mentality about, well, Notre Dame's fine, but they can't compete with all these other great teams. And I think they have that mentality because of what happened in the championship game against Alabama. And it's not the same team. They run a totally different offense. They've got really good NFL talent all over the field on the defensive side of the ball. And they are one of the more consistent teams throughout the country this year. And I don't think they're going to get blown out by Clemson. I really don't.
Are you picking them to upset Clemson?
Oh, what's today? December 11th? 12th? I got like 2.5 weeks to pick. No, I think Clemson is still more talented on the line of scrimmage, and the fact that Clemson has the motivation of losing in this game last year, the semifinal, and the fact that they have the experience of getting ready for the playoff. I think Clemson wins, but I do think it's down to the wire.
Yeah, I think so too. On the other side of the bracket, Alabama and Oklahoma, you know, everyone's just so quick to anoint Alabama as the champion. I think Oklahoma has a legitimate chance here. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No. I mean, we saw Oklahoma on a great defense last year put up more than 40, right? So we've seen it before. We know Kyler Murray is a special talent. The one thing that's going to be a big-time question mark is Oklahoma's offensive line, as good as they are, are they good when they have to run the football? Because we think of Kyler Murray and we think of all like the what he does and how we, you know, we have this vision of what's the air raid offense. But Oklahoma is also a power running team, and can they run the ball against Alabama? We saw an accurate quarterback with good receivers do score and control the game against Alabama in Georgia. Now they couldn't sustain it at the end. And ultimately, Jalen Hurts proved to be this new factor that they, you know, couldn't account for because they didn't plan on coming in. But we saw a team go toe-to-toe and be more physical and score and outplay Alabama and march down the field. The problem is, and I don't know if it's a problem or if it's something that's going to be a good thing, Oklahoma doesn't really sustain drives. Oklahoma is a quick-strike offense as much as they can be. And if they don't get the quick hitters, if they don't get those massive chunk plays, I think they're going to be in trouble. And Hollywood Brown breaking his foot in the Big 12 championship game, I mean, I know there's a thought that he might be able to come back, but I, you know, even if he's back, he's not going to be the same guy that had that level of awesomeness beforehand. So I don't think Oklahoma's going to win. But, you know, Kyler Murray's something special. So I think he might be able to keep him in the game.
All right, so it sounds like you like the rematch, the Alabama Clemson game. Who you got?
I think it's gonna happen, but I don't like it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Who do you think takes it home though in the end?
I still think Alabama's a better football team.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I think we can nitpick all we want. I think they're the best team in the country, and the best wide receiver is voted by the Biletnikoff Foundation, and the best defensive lineman, and the guy who's going to be, or one of the best defensive linemen. And now they have some question marks in the secondary, but so does Clemson. Obviously, so does Oklahoma. So I think Alabama is going to be your national champion again. Nick Saban's going to pass Bear Bryant. You know, if that's enough for him to retire or whatever, I'm sure those conversations will come up again. And maybe Jalen Hurts has a part in this. You know, we don't know how healthy Tua Tagovailoa is. But, you know, maybe Jalen Hurts has a part in winning them a national championship.
So I got to leave you on one question. You're a Syracuse grad. How about the year for the Orange?
Disappointing. Really disappointing.
Yeah, they had Clemson beat.
The fact that they lost that game to Pittsburgh and missed out on the 10-win season is really, I think, a problem.
Oh, man.
Dino Babers really needs to look at that.
He should quit right now.
Awesome. It's awesome, right? I mean, the wins they had, the game against Clemson, although that, you know, maybe, now maybe actually there's some disappointment with that.
Right.
Because, you know, you're a man downfield away from upsetting a top-five team on the road. And having that 10-win season and, you know, maybe playing in the ACC championship. So, like, there's some of that. But it's awesome because they haven't been really fun to watch on a week-in, week-out basis. And I know they were in a bowl game with Doug Marone, and I know they were, you know, and they had it in 2013 or whatever it was. But, like, that's in this day and age of college football, like, the guys that are being recruited to go to Syracuse now weren't even in high school at that point. Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So is it sustainable? That's the only question. It's great that Dino Babers is staying, right? It's great that they're going to have him for another year or two or however long he's there. It's great that they're doing renovations to the Carrier Dome. We'll see what the recruiting class turns out to be. But is it sustainable? Can they back up a 9 or a 10-win season if they beat, you know, West Virginia without Will Grier? With an 8-win season next year, you know. Otherwise, you just, you know, you take the step back. So if you really want to become the program that Syracuse used to be, you know, with Donovan McNabb, with Marvin Graves, with, you know, McPherson, then you have to have back-to-back bowls. You have to have back-to-back 7, 8, 9-win seasons. You have to, you know, towards November again, like this year, be competing for an ACC championship or a championship appearance every 5 or 6 years. Like, that's what you have to do. And I think they're going to do it.
He's Jason Horowitz, host of Playbook, SiriusXM's ESPNU Radio, Channel 84 with Andy Staples. Find him on Twitter at HorowitzJason. A great show to listen to. Love listening to it. And Jason, appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Kev.
So my mailbox has been flooded with questions regarding players sitting out in bowl games. Obviously, we know Rashawn Gary and Devin Bush will sit out as they prepare themselves for the NFL draft. Got plenty of questions in the mailbag about my thoughts on players, not just Rashawn and Devin, but also all the players in general that are sitting out the bowl games. Also got quite a bit on Twitter as well. Mark tweeted, wanted my thoughts about more and more players sitting out in bowl games. He had referenced QB Will Grier from West Virginia, mentioned that he's a high-profile quarterback, was surprised that someone of that caliber would sit out the bowl game. Dan then replied to Mark on Twitter, wanted to hear if I actually thought he was a high-profile quarterback, and then Adam chimes in saying he thinks he'll be a top three QB taken. So I'll get to Will Grier in a second, but in regards to players sitting out the bowl games, which was one of the original questions that Mark posted on Twitter, and quite a few I got on the mailbag, including Max's question from Chicago. Yeah, you know what? I don't like it, but I totally understand it. I don't like that these guys sit out the bowl games, but I cannot knock their decision, and I totally understand why they do it. Because the reality of the situation is the college football playoff has changed everything. We have been clamoring for years to get rid of the BCS, which only took 2 teams. All these teams were getting left out that we felt should have had a chance, and now we have a college football playoff. What the college football playoff has done, though, is yes, it's now put four best teams in the college football playoff for a chance to win the national championship, but it has devalued the other games. I mean, think about this for a second. As a Michigan fan, Michigan plays South Carolina last year in the Outback Bowl, which was really because Michigan had a tough season, and yeah, they made a bowl game, but you're going to the Outback Bowl? Like, how exciting is that? Like, am I going to get a blooming onion when I go into the Outback Steakhouse, which I probably haven't eaten at since I was 12 years old? But what I'm getting at here is that game, like, just doesn't carry as much weight and significance as a game that you play during the regular season when you're vying for an undefeated season or a Big Ten championship for a chance to get to the playoff. So when Michigan's up big on South Carolina last year and they blow the game and they lose, it's demoralizing, it's upsetting, but it doesn't carry the same significance as going to Iowa and losing on a field goal at the end of the game, or going to Ohio State and playing a really good game and getting into overtime and getting boned by the officials and not making the playoff. Like, those are the losses that sting, and those are the ones that suck, and those are the ones that you are basically hanging on every single play, gripping onto your remote control or whatever else you have in your hand and hoping that the team pulls it out. And you just don't have that same sort of significance in the bowl game anymore unless you're in the college football playoff and playing for the national championship. So Michigan's going to play this game against Florida, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, which I'm already thinking about how much I'm going to salivate after watching all the Chick-fil-A commercials during the game, which we'll be bombarded with, I'm sure. But it's entertaining. You know, it's fun. You want to watch the game. But, like, ultimately, what are you playing for? So you can finish in the top five at the end of the season in the polls? Like, you're not playing for a national championship. So I completely understand the mentality of these players that are deciding that they don't want to play in their bowl game because they know they have a significant amount of money on the table waiting for them by going to the NFL draft. There are five guys in particular: Rashawn Gary, Devin Bush, Ed Oliver at Houston, Greedy Williams at LSU, Will Greer at West Virginia. Like, these guys, like, why would you play in the bowl game when you know that you are going to have a significant opportunity to get to the NFL draft and make some significant money? But I will tell you one thing about all five of those players I just mentioned. If their team was in the college football playoff, all five of them would be playing. But when you look at those four teams that are in the college football playoff, name me one significant player, name me one player in general on Alabama, on Clemson, on Notre Dame, or on Oklahoma that is sitting out the bowl game. None of them. You know why? Because they're playing for a national championship. And that is what matters. So when you look at these players that are sitting out, it's in these other bowl games, whether they're other New Year's Six games or the Camellia Bowl or Armed Forces Bowl or the Best Buy, Popeyes, Kmart is closing, going out of stock, red tag sale event bowl. Like, it just doesn't, like, it just doesn't matter. And you relate this back to college basketball. So think about this. March Madness, 68 teams. And I don't care if you're Radford and you're about to play a blue blood as the 16 seed and you're about to get blown out by Duke or North Carolina. You still have a belief that you can win the game. And you're not going to sit out your best players. Duke right now has one of the best players in the country, Zion Williamson. Do you think Zion is going to sit out when March Madness rolls around because he wants to increase his NBA draft stock? Of course not. All because of one central theme. They are playing for a championship. And 18 to 22-year-olds, yes, they see that money. Yes, they see where their career is going to go. But what's most important for them is winning that championship with their team. And the college football playoff allows that opportunity to four teams right now, but it doesn't allow it for these other teams. So those five football players that I mentioned, key significant players that are sitting out their bowl games, the reason for them doing that is because they are not on the line to play for a national championship. So if you want this to get better, and obviously I want it to get better because I don't like seeing those players sit out. I would love to see Rashawn Gary and Devin Bush throw on that helmet and throw on that maize and blue and play one last time and get that sting out of their system from losing to Ohio State and play in that bowl game. I would love to see that again, but that will not happen until the college football playoff expands to eight teams or six teams. Now, going back to the Twitter questions I got from Mark, Dan, and Adam, which was about Will Greer, do I think he's a top-tier quarterback? I don't necessarily think he's a top-tier quarterback when it relates to the NFL. I think he is one of the top couple quarterbacks in college football right now, so I don't fault his decision. There's a couple key stats you look at, and the one that pops out the most for me in regards to Will Grier is that he has the best efficiency as a quarterback in college football while being blitzed. The stat is something crazy, like he's thrown 22 or 23 touchdowns when he's been blitzed this year and no interceptions. If I'm an NFL scout and I'm looking for my next quarterback down the road, that's something that I salivate over. Like, that is exciting to see a quarterback that is able to do that well under pressure, particularly when you get to the NFL and you're going up against some of the best defensive linemen and linebackers that have ever come out of college that are now up in the pros. So I think there's enough value there. I think Will Grier is probably going to go in the first round. There are teams like the Redskins, the Jaguars, the Patriots. They need a backup quarterback. And we've seen the value put on these quarterbacks that come into the NFL draft. I mean, look at how many are playing in the NFL this year. Mayfield, Allen, Rosen, Darnold. So, yeah, if Will Grier is one of the, you know, maybe top three or top five quarterbacks, he will go in the first round. Do I think he's going to have this ultimate sensational, unbelievable NFL career? No. I think the West Virginia system sets up well for him to succeed and get a high draft pick. But I cannot fault the fact that he's sitting out of this game because, you know what? It's the Camping World Bowl. Like, it's not a New Year's Six Bowl, and more importantly, it's not a college football playoff game. Like, what is he really going to ultimately do in that game to raise his draft stock? I don't see it. So again, it all relates to what I talked about before, which is the main fact that is I do not like these guys sitting out, but I completely understand it. And until the college football playoff expands and more teams get in, we will continue to see players sit out unless they are playing in a game that has major significance. And in college football right now, the major significance is the college football playoff.
Here we go. Red 29.
And now it's time to get you some bowl game picks. This will be for the early bowl game slate, games happening this Saturday into the following week. We'll save some of the picks for the New Year's Six games as we get closer to the new year on the next podcast that will drop a few days before the Michigan bowl game. Let's start with the AutoNation Cure Bowl. That game pits Tulane, a 3.5-point favorite against Louisiana Lafayette. Give me the Raging Cajuns. I love the underdog in this spot. Both teams have explosive offenses, but the key you look for in games like this is which team has the edge defensively, and there's no doubt in my mind that that is Louisiana Lafayette. Add to the fact that Tulane fired their offensive coordinator prior to the bowl game, going to be trying to work in some new things offensively. I think the wrong team is favored here. Not to mention, Tulane really hasn't played anyone this year, and you look at Louisiana Lafayette's schedule, they played Bama, they played Mississippi State, and they played Appalachian State twice, more on that team in a few. I really love the Raging Cajuns here. I think as a 3.5-point underdog in a game I think they can clearly win outright, that is an easy pick for me. I will take them, the plus 3.5. We'll go to the First Responder Bowl. That's Boston College and Boise State. The Broncos are a 3-point favorite in that one. The major question mark here is whether A.J. Dillon will play for Boston College. I had this sneaky feeling that he's not going to be able to go, on top of the fact that BC lost their offensive coordinator to UMass, so again, you're working another coach into the game plan there. And the Broncos have a ton of veterans on their team, and none better than their quarterback. So I think Boise State makes this an up-tempo game on BC. I don't think BC is going to be able to match up with them on the score tally. I will take Boise State minus the 3 points. Next pick, let's go with a pick'em game. It's the Cheez-It Bowl. Which, by the way, I don't think I can handle watching a wheel of cheese crack stupid jokes in 4,000 commercials during that game. But we'll flip through the commercials when that time comes. But this game, it pits Cal against TCU. Games like this, I really put more stock in the team that's not only coming in hotter, but the team that has a bit more veteran leadership, a more experienced coach. TCU fits the bill here. They got Gary Patterson. He's got that team moving in the right direction. They seem to have fixed the issues that they were having in October. They've won 3 of their last 4 to get into the bowl game picture. I'll take TCU here in a pick 'em. I think they win that game outright. And for my lock of the week, I never thought I'd say this after the pain they put upon us about 11 years ago, but my lock of the week, Appalachian State. They take on Middle Tennessee State in the New Orleans Bowl. The Mountaineers are rolling. They've been winners of 5 straight. the Blue Raiders, they've lost two of their last three. Appalachian State is a really good football team. They lost one game all year, and they should have beaten Penn State back in September. And I love the father-son coach and senior quarterback combo for Middle Tennessee State, and I'm excited to see Brent Stockhill play in his final game. If you haven't watched the Mountaineers play, they can put up points, and he's a really good quarterback. But it's the other side of the ball that I just feel Middle Tennessee State has a lot of problems, and they're going to have a really tough time stopping that really dynamic running game of Appalachian State. And what I love about this line right now is it's sitting at 6.5. I will take Appalachian State, 6.5-point favorites. That is my lock of the week. And that will do it for this week's podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, you can download the podcast and subscribe anywhere your favorite podcasts are found, including iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. You can always tweet me at krich23, and you can email the show hailtothepod@gmail.com. We'll get you another podcast as we preview the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, Michigan and Florida. We'll get that to you right around Christmas, and of course before the game as well. But in the meantime, enjoy the bowl games, and as always, go Blue.